And it's mandatory for all our management teams, including the founders and the departmental heads, to actually talk to the users themselves. So every Saturday, we do around 5 to 10 calls.
That was Nirav, the founder and CEO of City Furnish, talking about one of the many things that he does to create a truly delightful customer experience. And we'll dive into that in a lot more detail, but stay tuned at the end of the episode where we hear from one of our listeners who is working on a B2B idea and is having some trouble validating his assumptions. You too can submit your MVP ideas and ask us any questions that you might have using the link in the description below.
Awesome. So thanks once again, Ira. We'll be kicking off now.
Yeah, absolutely. A pleasure to join you guys.
So could you tell us about how you decided to start City Furnish and maybe talk about your background, which inspired you to set this up?
So I come from a furniture family background. So we've been in the furniture business since close to 27 years plus and running now. So I've always been fascinated by the furniture industry, like seeing the timber come in a very raw shape form. And then beautiful furniture being carved out of that same timber. Obviously, I was very interested to know the inside outside of the furniture business. So I delved into the business or the family business since a very early age then. Post my schooling, I went to Crudy Mill College, DU. I did my undergrad there. And that's where the first, the reference of consuming the furniture firsthand came into place. More than 70% of the people in Tier 1 cities live in rented apartments. And out of those, 65% plus apartments are semi-furnished or unfurnished. So as luck would have it, we also ended up in an apartment which was unfurnished during our college days. So there were three friends. We actually furnished the house and obviously through my own furniture family business. The real challenge for us came when one of our seniors actually was moving out the next year. So all of just kind of made us realize and kind of put a big question mark in my head that there is frankly no alternative to buying expensive furniture for temporary use. It's either you buy new furniture or you buy secondhand or old furniture. I went back and joined my father's business. Simultaneously, after some months, I joined Pepperfry as well, the offline experience center, which they were opening up. So that helped us and gave us a very good knowledge about the furniture industry. And even the more of an online or e-commerce, workaround as well. Post that, I went to Netherlands, where I met Mark Westlijk. So he's the founder of Just Eat. So he helped us as the first mentor in the journey of City Furnish. So at that time, I already had this question that I wanted to do something about furniture rental. But I just had this notion that most of the people I thought or knew, and including myself, I just thought that I was trying to push this idea of furniture rental. But people might not want it. Or it's not a need which everyone would have. It might not be a mainstream idea. So I discussed with him. And that's when he referred us a book. Which is called Four Steps to Epiphany. And it had a very good line, which we follow till date, that for every assumption, you need a validation. And that's what he actually told us to do about furniture rental as well. So we came back to India. I started doing 200 plus interviews. So we went out and talked to people at metro stations, near office hubs like CyberHub, CyberCity and all. And we used to ask them two major questions. That A, if you are living in an unfurnished rental apartment, how will you furnish that? And B, if you are, have a two-bedroom apartment, and if we are able to provide you a two-bedroom solution in around $4,000 a month, does that excite you? So for the first question, we already knew the answer that more than 95% people said they will either buy new furniture or they will buy old furniture. And a very small percentage even said that they could even relocate the furniture if they are living in a close proximity. The second answer we got was really surprising. So that was an astounding 89% yes, that people were interested that if given an alternative to buying furniture, and if it's $4,000 a month, they would be interested to rent the furniture as well. And luckily enough, we got our first 20 subscribers from that interview itself. So that proved to be an inflection point of our journey and made us realize that there is a need for this market. But also it made us realize three major important things. First, the lack of awareness about furniture rental as an option, like as a mainstream option. Second thing was when we started questioning people was, is that the furniture buying experience has always been far more superior than furniture rental experience. So that's where the third question came into place, that people viewed furniture rental with a sense of compromise, that compromise on product or on pricing or on quality, or maybe all three together. So that's how City Furnish was formed. So we decided that to tackle all these three problems, we'll start on a full stack model. Full stack essentially means from designing of the furniture in-house to having our own fulfillment centers in the cities we operate in, to even controlling the last mile delivery and assembly piece, even going an extra mile to tuck in the bed sheets at the customer's house, put on the dining mats at the dining table, to provide them an experience which brings a customer delight factor to the users so that they feel delighted over and beyond what they would have expected, let's say if they would have bought the furniture. As on till date, we have done 12,000 plus subscriptions. And I think we would be the only company in this sector for sure who have been profitable from year one.
Understood. And amazing. Congrats on the progress you have made. Profitability nowadays has become extremely important as everyone, you know, is stepping back and looking at the business models given the present situation with the coronavirus as well as economic contraction. And that's something we'll touch upon at the end as well. You know, one final question. Sure. Before we deep dive into the customer experience, and you know, Mazen will talk through that. How did you meet your co-founder? What was the story there?
So me and Saurabh, we actually knew each other from a kind of a startup idea we were thinking when I was with my father's business. So that idea was like a customized paper fry, so where you can buy and sell custom furniture. So we actually wanted to do that, and we tried that for 6 to 8 months. But we had 38% plus returns because we were completely relying on delivery systems like FedEx, Blue Dart and all. And they did not have the complete know-how and skills to handle large and bulky items like furniture. But even one single scratch around the corner or the chip renders the product useless. So that's when we realized that we need to control the supply chain. Unless we control the complete, I would say, the touch points for the user, we won't be able to provide a delight factor which we wanted to arise at for City Furnish to actually make that change happen, where a furniture buyer would eventually become a furniture subscriber or a renter.
So let's dive into our topic for this episode, which is customer experience and how do you change user behavior. What does the ideal customer look like for you?
So our journey was to make a furniture buyer a furniture subscriber. But that bridge or that gap was very big when we started City Furnish. So we thought that, okay, we'll need to bridge the gap slowly. And that's where the, I would say, the theme or the concept of furniture rental started. Furniture renter is a need and want-based category. And you are looking for a temporary solution to furnish your apartment. But our larger use case scenario is to make a furniture buyer a furniture renter, and then eventually a furniture renter or furniture subscriber. And how do we affect that change is that eventually we are able to provide in options with furniture upgrade, swap and relocation to the user so that eventually a furniture renter does not have the need arise to even become a furniture buyer in future as well.
Interesting. So it's not just, you're not looking at a specific demographic or income group. You're targeting everyone in terms of changing behavior. What does an outstanding customer experience look like for you?
Absolutely. So first and foremost, the ethos behind City Furnish is flexibility and convenience. So we provide the consumer the complete flexibility from the inception of ordering the products. So we have two options available for the user. So he can get the pre-made packages selected, which we call combos, or he can have an a la carte of options, which he can customize according to his needs and order that. The second thing is the quick speed we provide. So within 72 hours, we are able to provide you a complete setup and installation of the items you want. The third major thing is a one-stop solution. So you have furniture, furnishings, and appliances all under one single roof so that you don't have to go on to multiple, options or avenues to get your house furnished. So that's on the flexibility piece. So you have your furniture and everything comes in within 72 hours. The major other thing is the convenience. So that's where we provide them a complete ease of setup. So our team comes in, they will deliver and install the furniture, and we provide in complimentary furnishing options. So like bed sheets and dining mats, that comes in complimentary so that the user experience is much better or much smoother than what it would be if they would have just moving into a new apartment. The other two major thing is that they have an option to upgrade and swap the furniture as well. So that's where the major convenience for a temporary, let's say a tenant or a user comes in, at any time during his tenure, the consumer can upgrade the furniture or also at the same time even swap the furniture with something interesting or something different. And the last and foremost is the relocation option. So let's say after 6 months, you're relocating to another city and you just want the furniture to be relocated for you. So we just stop the existing package, whichever in city you are in, and just renew your package in another city where City Furnish is present in right now. So that provides them, again, a very ease of setup. And within 72 hours, again, your new house is furnished.
Makes sense. And how do you go about coming up with these features, and how do you prioritize features?
Do two major surveys every quarterly. One is a very interesting survey made by a company called Superhuman. So they have this product market fit survey, and that provides us very good insights to what our major demographic of users are looking at. So majorly the people who I would say would be the high expectation customers, why they use City Furnish, what do they like about City Furnish, and what do they expect more from City Furnish. So these are the three major things we get from that survey. And it's mandatory for all our management team, including the founders and the departmental heads, to actually talk to the users themselves. So every Saturday, we do around 5 to 10 calls, everyone, and we talk to the user. And we understand where we are currently and what is the expectation of the user. And then we go back to the drawing board and see that, okay, what needs to be done and what can be done as of this stage. So that's one major survey we do. The second major survey is more of a, I would say, kind of an NPS survey, where we try to understand the operational, I would say, challenges or problems we are facing or the consumers are facing, and how do we eliminate that. So, and interestingly enough, we take all of that back and try to solve it with a mix of technology and, again, I would say, team. Most of our backend technologies and system, starting from invoicing to inventory to asset management, has been made in-house, because a lot of these services are very new, like the complete subscription invoicing, auto renewals, auto debit. All of this does not or did not exist in 2015. So that's what we have done.
Makes sense. And now to kind of understand your business model a bit better, are customers willing to pay more for a superior experience, or is it more about increasing lifetime value?
Yeah, so that's a very interesting phenomenon. And accordingly, it varies according to the demographics as well. So we have the students and the first time, I would say, immigrants or the first time jobbers. So those are a little bit priced to value conscious users. That's the bucket we put them in. And then we have the recently married to, I would say, like the parents kind of the generation, who are more quality and I would say value driven than budget driven. So, and that's the same trend we see. Interestingly enough, the niche we are carving for City Furnish is more onto the value driven play. So all the furniture you see on City Furnish is designed in-house by our very good design team. It's all made of solid wooden furniture, so we don't compromise on material. So it's the same solid wood shisham material, which a user would aspire for if, let's say, if you would have want to buy the furniture as well. So that's the kind of quality and the, I would say, the value we try to maintain from the product and the service cycle. And interestingly enough, we try to price it accordingly so that it's able to fit in between that value conscious user and the quality conscious user, so that we are able to fulfill the requirements for both the buckets adapting. So that's how we are placed right now.
And now, kind of going back to when you started City Furnish, you already had two competitors, I believe. And as it is, you spoke about kind of the perception in this market. So what made you think that you could do better in terms of delivering a better customer experience?
Even as in date, we don't view furniture rental players as a competitor. We have to view someone as a competitor. It would be the mentality of like a kind of an IKEA kind of a mentality, that you buy a cheap or fast furniture and then you just throw it off or dispose it off when you are done with it. So that's competition we have. Frankly enough, I think more the competition in the furniture rental pair, the total pie and the total market becomes bigger for all of us actually, because you are creating more awareness for this category itself. And I think we were very sure, because we were addressing it from a consumer point of view rather than from a product point of view. So we were talking and speaking to the users always, and then building according to that, rather than building and then pushing it out into the market. So I think that that's what provided us more confidence into what we were doing at City Furnish. So be it our full stack model, be it, let's say, choosing solid wooden furniture in place of cheap particle board furniture, be it building our own fulfillment centers from day one, to even controlling, I would say, the complete subscriber journey as we are doing. So all those decisions were consciously done because we were speaking to the users first and then making the changes or adapting our model to it. As the business started making unit economic positive money, we got more, I would say, comfortable to expand that line of thinking, I would say.
You know, given the kind of challenges that you had and the perception, you know, that you were trying to change, how do you go about reaching more people and how do you go about getting new customers?
So interestingly, we have multiple ways of doing that. So obviously there are paid ways of doing, which I think we are already doing. So be it social media reach out or I would say the display ads and the Google reach out. What we do differently enough is we have a broker outreach program as well. So we have a field BD team who gets in touch with real estate brokers. As even as on till date, more than 60% or 70% of the apartments which are lent out, brokered through majorly through a real estate agent. So the role of our agents who are on the field is to actually onboard those real estate agents on a City Furnished partner app. And when the broker is showing the apartment to a tenant or letting out an apartment by a landlord, he puts in the leads in that City Furnished partner app. And then the City Furnished team calls and converts that leads. And that is provided as a very good mechanism to convert even the landlord and the, I would say, the offline community, because it gives you an, I would say, kind of an omni-channel play. And at the same time, because the broker is reimbursed on a success fee model, so as and when the order is placed, he gets 1 month rent as a commission. So broker is paid on a success fee model, but broker is pitching to, let's say, 10 to 15 leads, which he is talking to. So that provides A, an outreach program for City Furnished, and B, it provides us an omni-channel offline play, which helps us to create a large-scale awareness and resonance about a new concept, which is furniture rental. So as on date, we have 3,000 plus brokers across those five cities. And that has been contributing to around 25 to 30% of our business as on date.
That's really interesting. So able to reach your customers at the right time, sort of educate them on this new business model and bring them into your platform.
Exactly. So we've just gone a little like top of the funnel. So just one step above the funnel is that when they're looking at the apartment, and that's when we reach out to the brokers, because that's when they are actually looking to first finalize the apartment. As soon as they are done with the apartment, the user would want to look for furnishing that. So that's where the role of brokers and that complete channel of funnel becomes very important for us.
Because what advice do you have for others who are maybe just starting off when they think about their customer experience? And what are some of the best practices from what you've seen that you think is essential for others to employ?
So interestingly enough, I have the same advice which I got from Mark, is that generally in India, even I have done that, is that we made business plans on Excel and just drag that column around and the numbers looked very good. But generally, that's not how the market or the business plan pans out to be. So it's very good for every assumption to be validated. So it's very good if you are starting that you go out and you speak to users rather than at that time speaking to, let's say, investors or other guys, so that you actually first validate your business model, that what you are trying to build is actually something what users want or how many people want it. Is that something which is solving a mainstream need, or is it something which is a niche play?
I think that's great advice. Thanks a lot, Nirav. I'll now hand it back off to Abhiral to talk a little bit about some of the recent challenges with the coronavirus.
Nirav, that was extremely helpful. I think one very interesting point that stood out for me was how you guys even today speak to everybody, speak to customers every week at least once. I think that's a great habit as an organization. So let's dive into, you know, the coronavirus situation. You are a physical goods business at your core, right? Mm-hmm. You're selling furniture. How has it affected your business specifically? And how are you managing the team expectations and other such things at this time, which is...
So, yeah. So the first and foremost thing for us was that this is not something which any of us had imagined or planned for, like when it started and even as on date of how is it working around. So it was very important for us to be very clear and communicate well to all the team involved, the customers involved, and even to our investors. So that's what we did. So even as on date, we are doing a daily call with our team and trying to do a weekly emailer or communication to our consumer or users. So as you rightly said, because we are an operations intensive play, the lockdown has affected us. But again, as we know that at the largest scheme of things, it's very important for as a nation to stay safe, stay at home. So you don't want to risk either our team, either any other, because we actually saw a very good spike in the number of orders because a lot of people were looking to get a study set or a work from home chair or like a kind of a small office setup they could do in their home. So we tried to fulfill as many orders as we could before the lockdown started. And as the 21 days lockdown is still going on, so we just want to be very clear to the team and the users to handle their expectations, right?
No, that makes absolute sense. And is there any focus reorientation of the team for the next 21 days, given business might be a bit slow or like almost non-existent from an operational standpoint? Is there going to be a focus on tech or product, improving processes internally? How are you guys thinking about the next 21 days?
Yeah, so that's what we told the team as well, exactly. That take this time as a brief timeout and let's work internally. So we are still working from home on our tech piece. So we are going to launch recently a mobile app as well. So that's still working on. We are revamping our inventory systems as well. And we have asked the complete teams to work on a very detailed SOP structure as well. So that once you are out of it, we are much stronger than what we were, let's say, 20, 30 days before. So that's first. Second is obviously me and Saurabh, we are already thinking about on the larger scheme of, I would say, the funding environment and the marketing and outreach as well. So that's also something we are monitoring closely and might be affecting us in the coming months as well. Because this is something which though might last for a month or so, but it is going to have some, I would say, lasting effect for the coming quarter or so. So that's how we are planning it out. We are not trying to affect any salary cuts or any kind of hardships to our employees or our team. So that's what we are trying to see, that whatever is a expense which we can avoid. So we have trimmed down on marketing and trimmed down our other expenses which we could easily or were variable and which we could easily avoid. So those expenses we have started removing or cutting out on. Rest everything, I think we are very sure on that being like unit economic positive is provide us that level of some cushion or comfort that we have trust and confidence that if this gets over in, let's say, 21 to 30 days, we might be much stronger and come out of it positively.
No, makes sense. And what sort of discussions are you having with founders in other businesses? Any insights and inputs that you have got which you'd like to share?
So there are two major things which I think everyone is like looking for. So every, like, as a founder or as an employee or as a normal general person in India right now, everyone is looking for more clarity and a more kind of a like an end date, because that's how I think they can realign their hopes or their but as a founder, that's I think like the most challenging part right now, that neither we have that clarity and neither we can give it to our team members or other founders or our vendors as well, that after 21 days it's going to be back to business as normal. And second thing is, everyone is, I think, is just wondering is what the government steps would be. So as you would have seen that they recently just today announced some welfare package, I would say, for the more poor section of the society today. But they need to still think about, I would say, the startup and the MSME sector as well. So I think hopefully in the coming week or so, they might have some plan for that as well.
Awesome, Nirav. Thank you for taking our time to speak to us. It was lovely speaking to you.
So that's City Furnishes' story. And as Nirav said, it's so important when building a new business to validate your assumptions. So let's listen to Vinayak's MVP idea and think about how he can go about validating some of the assumptions.
The problem: Indian and Chinese students applying to foreign universities are assessed manually by admission staff, which means their mark sheets and allied documents are processed manually by an employee. This results in wastage of human resources and decision cycles which could exceed to 4 weeks. The solution: a smart software that reads through application documents, standardizes the data, and automates most parts of the decision, thus helping the admission staff to reduce the decision cycle.
He also added that since the service that he's thinking of is a B2B service, he wasn't so sure how to go about validating it. And I think that's a real challenge. It's something that I struggle with myself. When you start a B2B service, it's difficult to reach the right people. Is this something that you've seen in your experience? Have you come across this, Aviral?
I'll probably go back to one startup that we'd spoken to, which made software for universities to enable their placements. And I think that has a lot of parallels with this particular problem as well. When you're selling to a university, it can be really challenging because you don't know who the decision maker is and who you should reach out to. And I totally understand the predicament. I think a good way to start, which was what was very clever with this company that we had spoken to, they pitched their product first to their own university. So it was a founding team of three, and they went back and pitched the software to each of their institutes. And because these institutes were well-known brand names, it became very easy to tell other institutes that, hey, you know, we've pitched to these three institutions and they're using our software. It might be good for you. Yeah. What I realized from this was that, you know, you utilize your original connections or your original network to try to test the product in the case that you don't really know where to start. And once you have that, the case studies become really powerful. Because in B2B services or even product, case studies are the most important because other businesses will always ask the question, why should I trust you? And I think that's what really helped them. And they ended up, you know, scaling pretty fast to more than 100 universities.
Yeah, I mean, that makes a lot of sense. It's always hard to find the decision maker. And if you're working within an organization you're familiar with, it becomes much easier. And also then kind of building up trust one customer at a time is definitely the way to go. But in terms of validating assumptions specifically, before you even approach your first client, I think it's important to be able to collect data. And well, one thing that I really liked from Nirav's example and what City Furnish did was how they went out and spoke to people and asked open-ended questions to start off with, but then ended with a really concrete, here, if we can give you this solution, what do you think? Would you be interested? So is that something you've seen before? And what do you think about that approach? How can you do that in a B2B setting?
When you are working with a consumer product that has a larger ticket size, you can ask the customer for more feedback, right? So one customer becomes the source of many data points. On one end of the spectrum is a low ticket size product, which is usually useful for a single consumer. Maybe let's say one meal for one person from Swiggy, which is 150 rupees, where you'd probably have like 2-3 data points, which is how was the delivery time? What was the quality of food? If you have any feedback for a customer support team, how was it? While I think when Nira was talking about customer experience, it's more dimensions than that. You know, taking this argument forward, when your ticket size keeps on increasing, you're able to take more feedback. So now going back to the university example, you can take much more feedback and much more data points because the ticket size is larger. Now, let's say you are building a software for a particular university, they are paying, you can ask a ton of questions. Is this feature useful? Have you found any bugs? How many people need to use this? What's the concurrency, et cetera, right? And you can see because there are more features associated with a larger ticket size sale, you can start collecting more feedback from a single customer itself, right? So you don't really need 10 customers to get very useful feedback. You can, in fact, get it with one or two itself. So if you're selling to a large ticket size client, I think it's really easy to get feedback if you have just one client, which is why that one client is really important, especially if what you're selling is a software or something that you're building out.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. And now that you mention it, I think we did that a lot with Toquity as well, with my business. We had our three or four key clients that started off with that really had the problem. And we spent a lot of time with them understanding the problem and working with them to develop it together. Yeah, I think that's definitely the right approach for this particular idea. Go back to your university or a university in your network that you're close to and work with them to develop this for them. Start off with one company, turn it into a case study, as you said, and then grow it from there. Thanks, guys. Hope this was helpful. Talk to you soon.